Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? March has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now, the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Well, most viruses are created by the Food and Drug Administration.
So what's the solution? So how do we get that?
Well, here's the thing. We got to recognize that wealth is intergenerationally created. Most people who get rich don't get rich in a lifetime. Oprah, that's once in a while. Bill Gates, that's once in a while. Most people are intergenerational wealth. That means what? That if black people want to catch up, we have to start saving wealth and passing it to the next generation. Our biggest problem ain't that we're splurging. It's that every time we splurge, we're stealing from our descendants. You're giving them no inheritance to get started with. But the white child, they're starting out $100,000 plus, a million dollars plus. And I think we have to become more strategic in the way that we do our health plans as well as our life insurance plans. Because what I'm learning with a lot of these white folks, a lot of them are getting their first, what you want to call a shock of wealth, through the life insurance policy of their parents.
We talk about that too, life insurance policy.
Yeah. So there's so many different strategies towards wealth that we're not even thinking about because black people, our selfishness, it's also based on our, what you want to call it, emergency consciousness, survival instinct. We're only worried about our life. We do not think about those who come after us. Now, you got to realize now, when we got our slavery, white folks been already building wealth for a couple centuries.
Right.
We started behind the eight ball. Okay? So you got to play catch up. How do you catch up with somebody who's 100 yards in front of you? You have to run faster than they are.
That means
we have to sacrifice our spending habits more than everyone else in order to catch up. How does a people who are at the bottom waste money more than people who are at the top? So not only are you not catching up, you're not even thinking about trying to catch up.
This is good. And we got 1,000 questions, and we know you got a flight.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate the time.
Thank you. No problem.
One fat meat juicy point. What would it be before you go on?
I would say that we have to build our own schools. Everything we're talking about, the only way it becomes normalized, the only way it becomes a part of the collective black consciousness is if the children are raised with it as a group. Remember, all progress is group work. It's teamwork. That means we need all the children in Jackson to be taught the principles of financial empowerment. All the children of Jackson to be taught how to eat healthy. All the children of Jackson to understand what black family means and why it's so important. Until then, it's just a specialty. As we spoke earlier, diet being a specialty, wealth is a specialty. Think about it. If you're black and you're in the know about money, in the laws of finance, you are a specialty. You are an eccentricity. You are an oddity. That's a problem. Because for white people, gaining wealth is a regular part of their everyday conversation. Even poor white people are regularly talking about wealth. Black people don't discuss wealth at all. We have to move it from the marginalized status it has and make it a mainstream topic of conversation.
Is there an answer? I know you can't just drop a 2-second answer.
No. Here's what I would say with the unity. Again, unity has to be incorporated into the collective consciousness, which means children have to be socialized to unite with one another. Remember, our kids are socialized to disunite as a principle, right? I've had first graders, 6 and 7, talking about how black your skin is, how cheap your clothes is, how nappy your hair. You're 6. You're just your first year in school. How do you know all this? The parents. We are teaching our kids to be Negroes. So the only way you're going to undo that is to teach them to be African, which is why I want my school to be residential. Because I know sending them back to the same house that created the illness after school is going to undo everything I do from 8 to 3. You got the kids for 16 hours. I got them for 8. I can't win. Because the brain is the creature of repetition.
Yes.
Whoever gets to this the most will rule it. What did Adolf Hitler say? Come up with a lie, keep on telling the lie, be consistent with it. It ain't got to be the truth. But the brain cannot resist the temptation to believe something that is regularly presented before it. Repetition wins. We give our kids to white folks for the first 18 years of their life, then we want to remake them into Africans for the rest of their life. That's ridiculous. The formidable years of conditioning is birth to 12.
Yeah.
The formidable years of conditioning is birth to 12. We give that to white people.
Right.
And then when they turn 21, they already have habituated. Right. They already have a personality.
Yeah.
They already got hard habits.
Right.
And now we want to re-Africanize them.
Right.
Who does that?
Right.
What people have ever gotten free, giving the best years of their children to their oppressor, the manipulator?
All right. Today's podcast, we're on this live stream right now, is titled Eating and Killing the Gold Mine Goose. Eating and Killing the Gold Mine Goose, 619-768-2945. Now, today's podcast, which I wanted to do last month, but we're doing it today, was inspired by two occurrences. One was a house in Washington, D.C. And it's a semi-detached house. So on one half is my house, and then on the other house, it's the neighbors who, I grew up with these folks over 60 years. And I'm 64. So, I mean, I went to, going back, like I said, I'm 64. My mother moved into that house. I was in nursery school. Hadn't even started first grade. So with some of the inhabitants of the house, which we're all grown now, and they're older than me, I made mud pies in that backyard, parties in that basement, you know, in the family, my next-door neighbors. I don't want to put their names out on the air, and I won't. There was a rec center when they had that thing going. We just walked from backyards across the alley. We're talking about maybe it was less than 100 feet to the neighborhood rec center. The playground was there, so we played on the playground. The swings, the sandbox, foot races. As we got older, one of my neighbors, he liked cars. He and his father, they would always be working on the car, and in their driving parking space in the back of the house. Parents raised kids together and whatnot, and about a month ago now, putting the house on the market. Now, this house is going to fetch bare minimum $500,000 to upwards probably of maybe $700,000, but bare minimum $500,000. And that's after the real estate agent's commission has been taken out and taxes and all that. It's going to net them about $500,000. Now, what's disturbing about that to me is this. The mother of the house, she's still living. She's over 100 years old. She turned 100 past January. And she first moved into the house of her daughter. She had a daughter and a son. And now she's in a nursing home. She's doing all right in the nursing home, but she's in a nursing home. So the son and the daughter, and I guess with the blessings of the mother, they decided to put the house on the market. Now, the woman whose kids are really, because I guess she's got a daughter might be in her 70s. Not might be, she's got to be in her 70s, because that daughter's old enough to be my mother. She had her kids young. And then she's got a son who's probably about 2 years older than me. About 2 years older than me. So they've decided to put the house up on the market. Now, I'm going to call her Miss X. Okay. Miss X, the woman who's 100 years old, who I'm assuming she's still in sound mind, and the two children are definitely in sound mind. Miss X has great-grandchildren, all right? Each one of her children have grandchildren now. Now, I'm thinking you got Miss X, Mrs. X, you got the son and daughter. They're great-grandkids and grandkids all involved in this equation. How many, I don't know. I know about four grandchildren. I'm sure there's some great grands, but I don't know them. But I know four great grandchildren. All of them, out of that bunch, there's got to be somebody, in my opinion, just my opinion because it's not my business, that can move into the house and occupy the house, because that house is a ancestral house. There's a lot of stories. There are a lot of memories. And Miss X came up to Washington, D.C. from the South. Okay. Miss X did not get her high school diploma or her GED. My stepfather, who was a math teacher, he helped her get her GED. Now, she got her GED in life at the time when she had raised two children already. Okay. Was probably nearing retirement. And she really didn't need it. I mean, her house was probably paid off, but something, she wanted to get her GED. And my stepfather, who was, he had a master's degree in mathematics, he helped her get her GED. She basically achieved the American dream, you know, the house with the two cars, one's a Cadillac, without a high school diploma. So there's a lot in that house. Now, my house, once again, it's a similar to touch house, is right next to that. Now, I'm in the process of keeping mine. But that's one of the things that fired this podcast for today and why I titled this podcast, Killing and Eating the Gold Mine Goose. I consider the ancestral home the goose that laid the golden egg. And if you keep it in the, because that, I mean, look how many generations that house nourished. And it can keep on giving like that. But when you sell the house, you kill that particular goose that was laying golden eggs. And then, because see, all they're going to, look, that $500,000 that they're going to net out of this transaction, it'll probably be gone in 48 to 60 months. Meanwhile, it'll probably be split between three people when there are more people that could get, well, you know, the thing is, it'll probably be exhausted within 48 to 60 months. And the thing is, one of those children, excuse me, grandchildren or definitely great-grands will have to start all over from scratch. This lady, Miss X, or Mrs. X, probably bought that. Or they were already in the neighborhood when my mother got there. So my mother bought her house for $19,900 in Washington, D.C. Those opportunities no longer exist in Washington, D.C. You might have to go to West Virginia for that, but you're not going to get it in the immediate DMV. It's not going to happen. So whoever the next generation is in Mrs. X bloodline, if they want to buy something in that neighborhood, they're going to have to, you know, virtually be millionaires, to be honest about it. And this neighborhood has been gentrified. So when you put the house up on the market like that, you're killing the golden goose. Excuse me, you're killing the goose that laid the golden eggs. And on top of that, when you take that money and you don't reinvest it in something else, you're eating, it's bad enough that you killed the goose, and now you're eating it. So that's one of the things that sparked today's podcast. Now, the other thing was, I was talking to a friend of mine, and she stated, long story short, that she had a parent that transitioned, and she said, I'm not even going to name this, whether it was the mother or the father, but she said this particular parent didn't leave her anything. So that's one of the topics we're going to cover today, because as I thought about it, in my situation, my mother passed away like a little bit over 2.5 years ago with no written instructions. She left behind like start off at least four houses. And I've got legal control over all of that. But no written instructions. So I'm having to figure out a whole lot of stuff myself, which I've been managing to do, but with no written instructions. All right. Now, this person, so what I'm saying, I have to say this when I bring up this other person, and this is one of the things we're going to cover today. Regardless of whether a person leaves you anything tangible within, in form of a will or trust, every parent leaves with their children intellectual property. And that intellectual property can be anything. All right? It can be anything. And a lot of us don't recognize it, and we discount it, and it's sitting up right now in front of our face in plain sight. It could be something as simple as a recipe. I know of a woman, she was in the process of losing her house, and she started making cupcakes. And she wasn't good at it, but her daughters were good at it. Now, I don't know where they got the recipe from, but it could be something as simple as a recipe for cupcakes, bread pudding, peach cobbler. It could be a recipe for, I mean, maybe they knew how to, for instance, one of the things my mother left behind is five sewing machines. They're different types of sewing machines. I don't know how to sew, but that's a clue. But all parents leave behind something or several something. It doesn't have to be an insurance policy. It doesn't have to be anything tangible. It could be how they live their life, like their work ethic. My mother once paid the, now speaking of, because I'm in charge of the house now. Now, there's a generational house, there's an ancestral house in my bloodline that's in New Orleans. It's two of them, actually. And let me give you a backstory on this, and then I'm going to let you guys in. The ancestral house out of New Orleans, my grandparents, my grandmother was 15 years old when she got married to my grandfather. They had seven children together, and they went on till death do they part. They both went out in their 90s. My grandfather went out first. He was older. I don't know how much older. But he just stopped eating because he was afraid. He was blind. You wouldn't know it, though, because he never used a cane or a walker. But he didn't want to go before my grandmother went, so he stopped eating, got sick, and he went. That's how he went out, because he just felt he couldn't live without my grandmother. But in that house, I had one or two aunts. They had seven children. My mother was one of the seven, six girls and a boy, my uncle. And I don't know, I had to ask my cousin, one of my cousins, the details on this, but two or three of the children of that brood bought my grandparents a house, actually two houses. They're side by side. Okay. And to me, that's the ancestral house. Because when my mother grew up, they were on welfare, and the house, I remember one of the houses that she stayed in, her bedroom, my mother's bedroom, was the kitchen, if you can comprehend that. Her bedroom was the kitchen. Sometimes to feed the kids, the seven children, once again, my grandfather was blind. His only source of income was, you know, occasionally he would go out and preach a sermon or something like that. He didn't have a church or anything like that, but he had a gift to gab. My grandmother would feed the kids. Sometimes she would have to go out and go fishing to catch the food. My grandmother only had a sixth grade education, but she knew how to sew. So she taught all her children, I don't know about the uncle, but she taught all the girls how to sew. So when my mother left home at 17, she later on became a nurse, but her skill set from 17 was sewing. Okay. Fast forward into the future, when that house was in jeopardy of being lost, my mother, who had retired for the second time, due to her work ethic, okay, because I remember one summer, I didn't even see my mother for like 3 months, because she sent me off to day camps and overnight camps where I was going fishing, back horseback riding, all this other stuff. But she was working two jobs. Well, she had a job in place. She was a nurse. Today you would call her a nurse entrepreneur, private duty. So due to her work ethic, which is part of her legacy, okay, and you don't leave that in a will or a trust. I actually saw that. When the ancestral's house is in New Orleans was in jeopardy, she was able to write a check for $100,000 and pay it off. All right. So, and once again, this is nothing tangible that you can put into a will. So that's what's been keeping me going, because once again, every parent leaves something behind, and a lot of it's intangible. It's intellectual property, and a lot of us don't recognize it. So what I would like to do here today is, like, I would like to stop the killing of familiar goose that lay golden eggs, because every family, some kind of way, has at least one goose that lays golden eggs, or in many cases, they have a flock of geese that lay golden eggs. It takes form in different families. But the thing is, a lot of families don't recognize it. So some of the things we're going to cover today, we got a guest today from the Female Solution, Naima Latif. Parents, Children, and Akon's 10% Rule, and Robin, get ready to play that. Because I think Akon's 10% Rule is something that everybody should practice. I just said also, every parent leaves behind something, recognizing and monetizing intellectual property. Once again, that recipe for that famous, I mean, that your favorite childhood meal that your mother cooked or your father cooked or somebody in the family made, that's intellectual property. You can take that and you could monetize it. There's a place in Washington, D.C. called Ben's Chili Bowl. Ben Ali, he's gone now, but his wife, his widow, Virginia Ali, she's still living. But this dude started a franchise off of a chili dog. His grandchildren are eating. They're reaping the benefits off of a recipe that Ben Ali had. Virginia, if you ever get to Washington, D.C., go to Ben's Chili Bowl. Go to the one on U Street. More than likely, Virginia Ali, Ben's wife, who helped him build up the business, she's still around and kicking. Or go to Instagram. Ben's has got a Instagram page, and oftentimes you'll see she's still active in the business. But that's an example of intellectual property being monetized. Ben had a recipe for chili to go on a hot dog. Now it's a franchise. Something as simple, and everybody that's listened to this podcast, you've got some type of familiar family intellectual property that you need to recognize and monetize it. Let me go to Robin, then we're going to go to our guest, Naima Latif, podcast. We're talking about killing and eating the gold mine goose. We need to stop it. We need to stop killing the goose. Or in some families' situations, we need to stop killing the geese, because once you kill that goose, particularly if there's only one, your descendants will have to start all over again from scratch. Let's see. Good morning, Robin.
Hello.
And how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm doing very, very well, just having these personal issues I told you about earlier. But I'm doing well nonetheless.
Good, good. Could you run that Akon clip for us?
Yes, I will need you to unmute the
two. Oh, I know which one you're talking about. I got you. Got you. All right. It's unmuted. It's unmuted. Okay. All right. We're ready.
I got this 10% rule. Like, if whatever I'm purchasing isn't 10% of 100% value of what I have in the bank, I don't touch it.
Mm.
So, in other words, let's say hypothetically, if you have a car that you want to buy for $100,000.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you ain't got $1 million in the bank,
you shouldn't buy that car.
Don't buy it.
Right.
And that goes with your house, whatever. If you want to buy a house that costs $1 million, if you ain't got $10 million in the bank, bro, mm-hmm. don't touch that house because you're not going to be able to afford it. It's just impossible because mm-hmm. most times people don't look at the interest in the long run. And those houses, you know, those are 25, 30-year loan
investments. Yeah.
With that interest backed up, that $1 million turned into quick almost $2 million. This is almost 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And half these, you know, none of us got good credit or had good credit.
Right.
Coming up, we get that big advance and we go get that chain first, get that whip first,
mm-hmm.
get that house like
mm-hmm.
in that order.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The and
I got this rule. If
yeah, I like
whatever
I'm rule on that. Oh wait a minute, it's going in the loop. Let me mute that. So. Let's go back to my neighbors in Washington, D.C. They're going to net $500,000 out of that. Okay. Now, based on his rule, 10% of $500,000 is $50,000. And there's no such thing as a $50,000 house in Washington, D.C. anymore, at least not in that neighborhood. So, and it's not a high-end neighborhood. It's just a middle-class neighborhood. All right. So they would have to go to other places. But you can go to other parts of the United States and buy a $50,000 house. But once again, you know what? To actually be around using Akon's thing, most people can only really afford a house that's probably no more than $10,000. But that's a whole different podcast where we'll get into it on another day. Okay, area code 312, the female solution. I am a Latif. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Thank you for coming on. I know you've been up real early. You start before I do.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
And I don't know how in your family, Naima, but I'm whoever has the work ethic that you do, because you go 7 days a week. I don't know how many podcasts you do per week. I know you do at least 7. And TV streams you do, but I'm taking for granted somebody in your bloodline, probably your mother or father, I don't know, grandparents, you got to, that's part of their legacy because you got a work ethic.
Well, that is necessary for sure. One of the things that we do is try to be multimedia in terms of TV, radio, print, and right now we're actually about to start a press conference with Reverend Jesse Jackson. There was an act of violence towards two students at a high school, so we may be jumping off here in a moment since he comes out of the building, and we'll be live on our YouTube channel. But, you know, it's important to always use the skills that we have and the medium that we have to teach and hopefully to inspire and to motivate people like yourself and others who have knowledge to then share that knowledge so we can change the world we live in. And it's significant that you're speaking about the wealth that we leave our children, because when you leave your children a start, then they can progress. My father had a very strong work ethic. There were times I remember he worked two jobs to support us. My mother, she did the housewife thing just long enough for her children to get in school, and then she was back at work, so she was working all the time. And they had a routine. You know, my father worked nights, my mother worked days, so there was always somebody at home. And my father tells me a story about when, after the first two children, because I'm the last, I'm the third of three daughters, but after the first two children, he said, look, we're going to buy a house. No more apartments, no more moving here and place to place. I want my family to be stable in a home. So they went looking for a home where they could have their children be stable and always have property in the family, so you never had to worry about being homeless. And it had an impact on our lives, because one of the things that it does is that, number one, it provides a home base that
right.
you own, you take pride in, and you can even, and then they grew food in the garden. My father had a big garden with greens and tomatoes and cucumbers and all that sort of thing. So I saw them do that, and I saw their cooperative marriage in which they made sure one parent was always home, one would take them to school, the other fixed the breakfast and drop the other one off the train. So they had a system, and I saw the partnership, and I also saw the emphasis on ownership of your home. And then, you know, my father, he passed away at 79, but, you know, you kind of know when you're about to transition. About a week before he went into the hospital, he sat down with me with all of his papers. He had it in a big notebook, all of his insurance papers and everything else, sat down with me and said, now, this is all of my stuff, you know, everything's paid for and all that. So I want just make sure you stay, take care of mom. You know, but all of my business is in order. And we went over it,
okay.
And then a week later he went to the hospital and then went into a coma and then passed away. But he was organized in making sure, and then he had investments to make sure that money was coming even afterwards, different things. And so the bank was sending us checks even from that afterwards, plus, you know, he had his retirement and all of that. So he had things organized so that we would always be taken care of. All three of us finished college, all three of us, you know, professionals in the media field in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, me and my sisters were currently writing a book together called Growing Up Charles. My maiden name was Charles. So we're just talking about what it was like growing up in a neighborhood of homeowners where all of the young couples had the vision that they wanted to raise their children in a stable environment and always have property they could pass down to the next generation. So right now, even the neighborhood where I live, many of the houses are now occupied by that second generation, which was us that grew up there. And we all have an understanding that each generation is supposed to build on the previous one. So that's critical. And I look at the contrast of where I'm at now and looking at the neighborhood where this act of violence occurred. You have a lot of transient people. You have poverty. And so when that attitude – I got to go now. He's coming. When that attitude doesn't exist, that's when you pass to that we don't have stability. Got to go, but thanks so much.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Raymond. All right. She's – well, that's part of her work. She's always on top of news. She does a lot of pop-up stuff, too. But in any event, and I think Naima is – I think she's – now she's in charge of the family house up there in Chicago. In any event, I'm going to leave her mic open if she comes back as she's reporting on that story. Robin, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, I was let's see. Ooh, wait a minute. One of the things in our program notes here, topics covering the people, Naima might be back. She's still in the studio. She's still logged in. We still got her mic open, but she's doing, as she stated earlier, she's on top of a breaking news story in Chicago. So if she wraps anyway, which involves Jesse Jackson, so she's right on top of it. So if she comes back, right now, mic is still open. All right. but she'll probably be on that for a bit. Some of the topics covered today would be, parents, children, the ACON 10% rule, we've done that. Every parent leaves behind something, and that's recognizing and monetizing intellectual property. I believe every family has family assets. They might look different from family to family. They might not be recognized, but there's typically some type of family asset. But it's got to be recognized, and you got to use it. Let's see, the power of the ancestral health, house, hopefully, if Naima comes back today, I'll have her speak on her experience with that. And I'm reading on my topics cover for our program notes today. The Chin family versus the King family. And then general, all right, let me merge that into Chin family and the King family. I'm going to merge that into generational wealth, common denominators, Amish family distinctions, Patel family, Chin family, and your family. I would say the common denominators on a critical mass basis when it comes to Amish families, the hotel owners within the Patel family, because not all Patels are associated with hotels or motels. And I'm just saying the Chin family as representing Asians who own carry-out stores, Chinese food. The common denominator is, number one, they're family-based businesses. That's number one. And that family-based business is a goose. But it's a goose that lays golden eggs. Now, here's another common denominator. So many Amish families, not all, but many Amish families, the Patel family, the hospitality Patels, and the restaurateur Asian families, Chin families in this case, they have family-based businesses. A lot of those businesses are mom-and-pop businesses, literally. That's a common denominator. All right. Another common denominator is, about this yesterday, and we probably covered this on at least two podcasts, is that the way I describe it, is they have a menu-style business model. I also call it a Chinese restaurant menu business model, meaning that Amish family, Tell family, or the Chin family, or the Yi family, or whatever the name might be, they just don't depend on one source of income. With the Amish family, they might have a farm. One of the items on their menu could be selling eggs. Another one could be selling they're selling poultry. Or they could have a little family restaurant where that doesn't even go to that part. They could be selling pies, shoe fly pies, peanut butter cheesecakes. They could be selling making and selling furniture, that's about five or six things I've named. they could have a farmer's market. Some of these family-based businesses take in $5 million a year, family-based. You know, I ran across one Amish business the other day. They do sheds. They do chalets. They do tiny houses. They do log cabins. They have probably about 7 or 8, possibly 10, I think, 10 different items on their menu, all based on some type of housing, all family-based. Patel family, we can do the same thing. You know, we can rent you individual rooms, handle meetings, conventions, you know, different accommodations depending on, you know, how that particular family wants to roll.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite example out of all this is the what I call the Chinese restaurant menu, because you're going to get anywhere from 100 different items to the menu that I go by that I ate off yesterday. They have over 300 items on their menu to pick from, all deliverable within a moment's notice. I mean, you call up and what do you want? You tell them what they want, they take your order, they take your card number, or if you're going to pay by cash. And then within 30 minutes or so, it's delivered. There, matter of fact, I got a menu right in front of me. Now, yesterday, as I ordered for 2 days, so I don't have to cook. Yesterday, I ordered off of their lunch special. Putting this out there because for some of you, I think this could be a breakthrough for some of you. Some of you don't need it, but some of you that might need a breakthrough need it. I know I need it because I'm restructuring what I do based on the menu business model for what I do. I don't have anything. My thing is housing. So I have to structure what I do based on that. But I ordered off the lunch special yesterday. Now, on this lunch special, okay, now this is out of their menu. This menu has over 300 items. But their lunch special item, menu, which is the menu within a menu, everything is priced at $6.95. Okay. Very affordable. It's not going to break the bank. Okay. And I'll eat 4 days off of the two orders that I ordered yesterday. All right. $6.95 per dish. All right. You got to order between 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. So, like, after we concluded this podcast yesterday, I went on and ordered my two things, and within 30, 45 minutes, they had it here. So I'm good until, I'm good until probably Saturday. So, but just on their lunch special menu, they've got 32 items. You can call it 32 paychecks. They've created 32 opportunities just based on lunchtime, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Monday through Friday only. $6.95. Make it real simple. I ordered an L7 and an L15. Oh, excuse me, not an L7. I ordered an L17 and an L15. I'm good to go. Probably till Saturday. Possibly Sunday. But knowing me, it'll be all gobbled up by at the latest Saturday. And today's Thursday. So, once again, the Amish, on a critical mass basis, the business-owning Amish, okay, mom-and-pop family businesses, and I would even look at this menu I'm looking at, something that people take for granted on this piece of paper. I would even consider this menu that's got over 300 ways that this family gets paid. Now imagine if you received, if you set yourself up within your family where you have, because you're not going to get this through reparations, people. The government ain't get, there's no reparations package that's going to come like this. IBM, Xerox, Shell, this is something that you're going to create on your own based on your own circumstances and your skill set or whatever you want to do. All right. This I'm just using the one I got in my hand. They have created through this family business, this menu that I have in my hand, I consider a family asset. The component parts of this menu, and I talked about this yesterday, chicken, beef, seafood, pork, rice, and vegetables. Those are the six component parts that they use to do all these different combinations, where it's over 300. And that's 300 opportunities priced at, what's the cheapest item in? Crispy noodles, anywhere from 75 cents for some crispy noodles to, oh, the most expensive item is Seafood Delight. That's $15.95. They're not going to go broke. When you've created within your family 300 opportunities to collect paychecks, imagine if you got 300 paychecks a day. I'm talking to the people in the social services office. Talking to the reparations people, too, the people that are gun-hoeing reparations. Robin, any thoughts, comments?
No, I'm just listening.
You're
in.
Recovering. Robin works a long day.
I
she's
am.
She's 3 hours behind me. So it's, what, about 8:35 where you are?
Yep. And I start at 4 a.m. locally.
Yeah, she sure does. Well, that's how we met. It was, I was listening to a 7 a.m. blog talk and ran across you in one of those chat rooms. So it had to be 4-something where you were at the time. Okay. All right, Naima's mic is still, but she's probably still, Naima, if you're there, just come on in anytime. But she's still probably working on that story in New York. On that note, before we go to other callers, once again, the topic today is killing and eating the gold mine goose. And we're talking about generational wealth. There's no one set cookie cutters. There's a lot of cookie cutters that you can attack this. I would just like to see people stop killing the goose in their family that lays the golden egg and keep it going from generation to generation. Because once you kill a goose and you eat it, your kinfolk, your children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, or whoever, they got to start all over again from scratch. And it ain't the white man's fault if that happens. It's yours. right. Today, topic is killing the goose that laid the. I mean, killing the goose, killing and eating the goose that killing and eating the gold mine goose. We're talking about generational wealth. What we must do to stop killing that goose that lays the golden eggs within families, because that does happen a lot. Oh, wait a minute. Where do we go? Okay. Naima, you there? She still might be out.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay, great.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Well, you are working on a trending topic. Would you like to share that with us?
Yes. Yeah. There's a high school here in Chicago, Simeon High School, and it's in one of those neighborhoods that's economically troubled, and two of the students were killed with gun violence, you know, and it's a unfortunately common situation that occurs here in the city. And Reverend Jesse Jackson and his staff were there to provide some kind of encouragement to students, also to remind them, you know, when they hear that things are going to happen, because a lot of times there'll be a lot of conversation on social media before there is an act of violence, so the children know it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't tell the adults who could intervene and perhaps prevent it, because everybody's afraid of being called a snitch and all that. Well, the result ends up being that someone did. So he's trying to encourage them to stop that culture of silence when there's impending violence. And, you know, we talked about just the whole condition of the city, the economic distress, the lack of opportunities, and how this creates frustration that often explodes in violence. A lot of the violence is related to the drug trafficking culture and all of that. But the fact that young people don't have opportunities because the families are not doing as you're advocating here, that points to what the result is. When you don't build a strong community where you have the infrastructure of businesses, family-owned businesses, enterprises, people feeling good about themselves, people having a life that has meaning, then it descends into this kind of senseless violence,
right,
where people are killing each other over respect. You disrespected me. Well, it's easy to feel disrespected when you already feel like you're not worthy of respect. So this issue of passing on wealth, generational wealth, pride in oneself, this is what's missing in these areas where there's so much violence. And so this today's incident was just an example of what happens when you don't have a community that is forward-thinking. And couples are getting together, like my parents, realizing you have to lay a foundation for your children and your grandchildren. And so I can use my parents as an example, because they're doing some basic things like getting a home and then using their money for various investments that would pay into a fund. My mother,
mm-hmm,
she set up a college fund so that all of us were educated, and then all of our children were educated. So now, with myself and my sisters, all of our children, they were educated, and they went abroad, and they lived in various parts of the world, so they were able to take the family even to another step. And all of them are involved in various enterprises. I mean, I have a nephew, his and his wife and children live in Australia. Another niece, her and her husband live in China. My daughter, she just came back from 5 years in Korea. In addition to her job that she works, she also has an online business. So, you know, all of them
all this grew out of the what I would call the ancestral house.
All of that. And I have another niece, her and her husband, they're in the very growing business, the cannabis business, which,
uh-huh,
you know, another enterprise that is growing for those who understand the future and where that's going to. So we have all of these second generation stories of growth and expansion because of And then my father, his mother, they owned a farm in Alabama with trees on it, pecan trees, a lot of timber. So one of his brother's daughters, she's managing that property now, and all of the grandchildren, there's a bunch of us, when they sell timber on that land, she sends a check to all of the grandchildren. So we're getting paid from the decisions made by his mother and father down in Alabama. My mother's...
I need to have your family talk to my family. We got 88 acres in Terrebonne Parish in Louisiana, but for some reason, nobody within the family has touched it for those 88 years. And it's got sugarcane on it.
Of what to do with it.
No, my mother tried to put them together, but she just didn't have the political... She didn't have enough, what do you call it, social capital and political capital within the family to pull anything off. But nobody's done anything with it, and that's 88 acres.
Right. So, I mean, that's just money standing there, abundance, wealth standing there that could be helping all of the children. But
right.
If you don't see it, then you can't manifest it. You have to have a spirit of cooperation as well. If you raise your children where they're competing against each other, they don't talk to each other, they're mad at each other, that's going to wind up being a family that creates poverty because they don't know how to work together. And you have to be able to work together to create wealth. So
Right. Parents
need to realize, you know, when they pit children against each other for whatever ridiculous reason, that's destroying the future.
Now, what about
one of the things that we have to learn in terms of parenting?
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what the right word to use, but for lack of a better word, control. Or in charge of? Are you in charge of the? How are you guys doing with the ancestral house right now? Who runs that?
Well, I am now. Because my other sisters, they live in other states. One lives in Boston, other lives in Florida. So I'm in charge of the ancestral house. We put it in trust. So we all met with a lawyer, all of us. And my mother, we met with a lawyer, put it in trust. So there won't be any issues when it comes down to her transition of it going to probate and all of that. So we even had to be forward thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. And your house is, you have a solar home now, don't you?
Yeah, and I have a solar home, so in a few years, I will not have any electric bills. I need to step away for just a moment, but I'll be right back.
All right, sure. Mm-hmm. And today, we're speaking with Naima Latif, the executive producer of The Female Solution. And she's, matter of fact, before I met Robin, Robin was the first person I interacted with on Blog Talk. But I used to listen to The Female Solution. I listened to her about 2 months before I even thought about putting together It's My House. And I've been listening to her over 8 years now. But... if you haven't listened to a very good show, and when she comes back, because some of the stuff that she's putting out, I'm looking at the intellectual property with that, that she can put together a workshop, teach people this stuff. And whatnot. So, let's see. Okay, before we go, our next caller. I got to get my board acting right. Because sometimes it sticks. Okay, Robin, you there? Okay, Robin is.
Yep.
Robin, Hilltop on tonight?
Yes, it is.
What time?
9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
All right. I hope you haven't. Well, you'll probably take a power nap way before that. But people, that's an interesting show.
So, L.A.?
Yes, yes, ma'am.
Yes.
So,
well,
I'm
back.
So,
I'm gonna
you
probably
have
to sign off in.
You have to go.
Yeah, in just a moment. But you're off at in the next nine.
I'm off. We're going to be on until. We'll be on for about a good 30, 40 minutes. I mean, at least 30, 40 minutes. But one thing I want to put out there, if you haven't done it already, I'm lobbying you that because you're in charge of an ancestral house right now, you guys set up some stuff. I think that'll be a great thing if you put that show on the road and teach people.
Well, you know, I think that might be some tips. Yeah, maybe put a pamphlet or maybe just a show, a video on.
Well,
the basic
not only
thing,
a show, but an actual workshop.
Yeah, and really, so that people can start planning who has small children now. As a matter of fact, I did a column in the paper and you're going to address at my mother's church. I told the story of how she, when she was a young woman, she started saving money because they had a little savings club at her grammar school. So she started saving money. She was saving money for when she got married. She hadn't met my father yet. She was just a teenager. She started saving for when she got married. And then she started saving her children's education. And I should remind you, she was in her early 20s when she started the college fund for children that she didn't have because she didn't have the husband yet. But she was so forward-thinking, so she had all this money saved up for a future that didn't even exist yet. So by the time she met my father, they had a savings. Her life started. And once again, like I said, working two jobs, three jobs sometimes. And then when each of us got ready to go to college, we had a savings fund, and then they put money in investment, money coming in. And then when we got married and had children, she had money to send the children to school. So her vision started before she even had the husband to get the house and the children with. So that's the kind of vision you have to have. You have to plan your life before it manifests. That's one
she
of the reasons why
she was walking on
my
Steve Harvey piece. She was walking on Faith Street before she got married. All right.
So,
well, I know you got to jump off, Naima, but I'd like to see you put together a workshop on that.
I think that's necessary to do that.
Well, you know what, Naima? Let me put
together.
This out there. Let me put this out there too. I've got 4 acres of land here in Florida. It's nice wooded. It's off grid. If you want to put together a retreat, I got the venue for you.
Yes. But let's work on that. Let's make that happen and get people ready to start passing on their ancestral wealth. So right now we're on our way to meet President Joe Biden at O'Hare Airport. He's coming in town, and, of course, you know, his whole thing has been the COVID and the vax and all that.
Uh-huh.
So me and my media associate, we're on our way to do that story. So the work never stops.
Well, Naima, how many hours a day do you sleep? Something like 4?
Maybe.
Yeah, you're up with the female solution because I'm an hour ahead of you. So you're up with that, and I know you're probably up a good hour or two before that.
Yes.
And it seems like you're at it all day, 7 days a week. So,
it's a way of life.
But I see where you got it, and that's what I'm calling.
Yeah.
It, you know, your parents left you with that work ethic.
Yeah. And I'm glad you asked that, because now that you said it, that's what's helping me realize that's where it's from. They set the example. And you always think ahead. Think of the future that doesn't exist and start preparing for it as if it is, and then it will become.
Well, I'm glad you said that'll help me start. It's not 2022 yet, but I'm going to start thinking and acting based on what you said today. So, Mrs. Charles, wherever you are, God bless you.
But thank you for that, L.A. I'm sure there's
smiling, and my father's smiling from the other side, and I'll let my mother know
for those of you who haven't heard you before, when can they catch the Female Solution and the number you know about her?
Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time, which, of course, is 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. We got two of our hosts that are on Eastern Time, so, you know, I know we got a large listenership. And then we also got a host on weekends from London. So Saturdays is 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern. And if you're on London time, it's 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. On London time. And, of course, Sundays, they're 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And we have our host, Viata, who does the Friday show. She's also back with us on Sunday on Soul Purpose Healing from 7
right.
to 9 p.m. So every day we have just an exciting group of hosts that give life-changing information. Our whole goal is to raise consciousness so people can begin to create a new earth. They can begin to create a new way of life, a new culture, a new way of being. We always had the power to do it. We just need to know we have it. And all the steps that it takes, some of them are some of the things that you're talking about right now, with organizing your family, organizing your future, and keeping your wealth so that every generation can pass on what they have. This high divorce rate, this high homeless rate, I mean, all of these things where people are fighting and separating and
right.
living separately and not combining their wealth.
If you don't mind sharing, do you know how much your parents purchased that ancestral home for?
You know what? They bought it, I think it was $15,000.
All right, now let me ask the next question. How much would it cost to buy that same type of house in Chicago now?
Maybe $180,000.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Keeping things going. Families don't. I mean, because you know. There's a big difference between $15,000 and $180,000, particularly if somebody's
Absolutely.
Got a 30-year mortgage attached to it. You know, you got to start. That's
right.
why, like, you know, some on some of those, what do you call it, relationship shows that you do occasionally, I think that's the root cause of a lot of people not getting along in those marriages is because we're dealing with couples that have to start all over again from scratch. And that brings on a
right.
financial burden.
Right. And the problem with that is that you're in a sense competing with people who have had generational wealth passed down to them. You know,
mm-hmm.
you're getting out of college full of debt because you had to get student loans. They're getting out of college debt free because their parents had the money to pay for it, and they got a family business to go into when they get out. So how
right.
are you all going to have equal opportunities even when it comes to starting a family? You're struggling through yours, and they, you know, they got to ready for them when they get ready to start a family. So the relationship
right.
issue, that is the foundation. We always say that's the foundation of everything. And so when you provide a means for people to be able to start a life comfortably, you make it a lot easier for them to work out their differences. But when you're
True.
Constantly dealing with the stress of the economics and blaming each other for not having money and all of that, that's just so toxic.
Right.
And that's what they say the number one thing that couples break up over is money.
Money. Well, something else that you said that your parents did, they had a vegetable garden in their backyard? In the backyard?
Yeah. Yeah, my father would give away bunches of greens because he was growing so much, and we couldn't possibly
uh-huh.
eat it all. Didn't even have room for it in the refrigerator. He just give away to the neighbors. And also my father
he didn't have to go to Whole Foods. He grew Whole Foods in the back.
Right, and then as his biggest hobby was fishing, and we would go on overnight fishing trips with him and come back with a great big cooler full of fish. And there was more than we could possibly eat, of course, again, sharing with the neighbors, because you know, you just had this overabundance.
You know,
so
Naima, that,
to,
what you're doing, I mean, I haven't done the fishing part yet, but I'm liking the information that you put out because I think a lot of couples today, baby boomers, Generation X, even millennials, particularly who couple up, I think if they would go back to the lifestyle that you're describing, that your parents lived, I think that can cut out a lot of the toxic relationships that are brewing these days. Grow your
own food.
Catch your own food. If you don't know how to do it, matter of fact, are you still doing pandemic gardens or farms, rather?
Yes, this year we did. What we did was allow the ground, because I had read that the earth will always produce what it needs to replenish its own minerals. So we allowed that plot of earth to produce, you know, what some people would mistakenly call weeds, but
right.
Things like clover actually help to replenish the nitrogen that has been depleted in the soil. So, you know, we watched it grow things like dandelions, clover, burdock, and all of these things have nutritional value. So we're now harvesting the plants that, and we're going to be putting out our label, our pandemic garden, our pandemic farms label on various teas, various greens, various products grown freely by Mother Nature. We didn't have to disturb the soil or make it do something. We're allowing it to give us what we need. And the interesting thing about I mean, the earth has an intelligence.
Right.
This is a living being. And these things that are growing, they're not by accident. They're things that we need to restore the balance, not only for the soil, but for our bodies. So the products that we're seeing coming out of the ground this season are the things that we're going to need to help with our depleted immune system, and isn't that
right.
What everybody's obsessing about, afraid of getting a virus? So the earth is giving us what we need. We just have to know that these things are growing. They're not weeds. They're not accident. The earth is giving us what we need, and it's giving itself what it needs as the result of having been forced into levels of toxicity because of the garbage we've been putting on her. So
right.
It's amazing watching this process. So look for our pandemic farm label. We're going to be putting out products.
So you guys are coming out with your own products then?
Yes. We've got a label. And my niece, who inherited my mother's artistic talent, she created a logo for our product line. So, I mean, we're just continuing to reap the benefits of all the things passed down from our ancestors. And so we've got the great labels.
Yeah, Naima, you definitely
got to
put together. Zoom meetings are all right, but I think you need to put together an on-the-ground, face-to-face. Actually, you're talking about a retreat. Because all the stuff you're talking about, I can see not only a weekend retreat, but a 7-day retreat. Where people actually, you know, get involved with, get their hands dirty with learning some aspect of farming or catching food. I mean, the next thing, you'll probably end up having your own flea market selling your own products soon.
That's the next step. Because
you guys are doing a lot out of Pembroke and Hopkins Park.
Yes. So, you know, we're going to work with the farmers there and also work with the farmers markets in the cities and create a means whereby people can buy vegetables. I know we've had Reverend Al Sampson on our show a couple of times. He organizes a farmers market every year where the farmers come up from Mississippi and Alabama and bring their produce. And we've been talking about finding a place for storage for the food and distribution. Because, I mean, this is the kind of thing that Marcus Garvey talked about. I think we had on our last show on Saturday, the brother who's head of the Marcus Garvey Institute. But he envisioned the whole system of you have your farming, you have your distribution, you have your shipping,
So you have all the steps that you need to take care of yourself. We've been missing a lot of those steps because we haven't been owning the production. We haven't been owning the shipping. We haven't been owning the distribution. This is what has to happen. So when you own all of the steps that it takes to manage an economy, you don't have crime. You don't have violence.
Right.
You don't have hopelessness because you have resources that you have created.
You're absolutely right. That's well, I'm looking forward to the Female Solution putting that stuff out because a lot of women control the purse strings, but they don't have the information or the knowledge base to, you know, to put it together. But you do.
Right. Knowledge.
So that's why I'm lobbying you guys because if it's needed, and I believe it can solve. It might not be a silver bullet, but it can solve a lot of problems.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we'll make it happen. We'll do that retreat too, because we're looking at coming down to Florida again. So.
All right. Yeah. You were down here earlier this year. Yeah. Well, because the network. Just among us bloggers, we got enough people in strategic locations. It's just a matter of coming up with something simple. Might not be easy, but something, you know, non-complicated. You know, growing food, I don't know anything about it, but it's a doable idea that can be done virtually anywhere. It's just a matter of, okay, well, if they can do it, you know, then I can learn how to do it, something like that. My lane is I know how to get land on the cheap. So, but we got to eat because I love Whole Foods, but I haven't set foot in a Whole Foods in a number of years because Whole Foods is expensive. So,
we need to have our own. Kind of food.
You're exactly right, because everything you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Why go to? I had a thing once where I said, you know what? I'm gonna start going to Whole Foods every day for lunch because they got a hot bar. I went Monday and stopped on Thursday because I had dropped like nearly $100. And knowing what I know now. I mean, I could have been buying seeds with that, or you know, something else more.
That's another thing.
You know,
buying fruits with seeds because you want to be able to reproduce. And these are also the things, of course, we talked about on our farming show. Don't buy seedless things. Buy things that you can reproduce. You know, think of other fruits that reproduce themselves and vegetables that reproduce themselves. You can take a bag of potatoes, and one of those potatoes you can use to plant, and it will grow other potatoes. So
did not know that. Okay. let me ask you this.
Anyway,
now, you live in Chicago. You live in Chicago, which is a very urbanized city. But you're broad thinking. A lot of the people that live in the city, I think the solution for them would be if they drive 45 minutes or 1 hour away to a rural area. The people that are, you know, when you go out, how do you handle that type of thing?
Yeah, because, you know, it's about, when we go out to Pembroke, it takes maybe about, well, from my house, I live far south, so it takes maybe 20, 30 minutes to get out to the rural area. But that's not bad because the city itself, I mean, it takes, you know, you can drive for an hour in Chicago and still be in the city. So if you're going to go to the outside the suburbs or the rural areas, it's the same thing, you know, driving an hour. To get out to the country or maybe a half hour. So people who live in big cities, they're used to long drives.
Right.
So, I mean, there are people who are looking at maybe buying property in the country and still having their city home. That's doable.
But not some people that live in the city, you can't pull them out.
Well, if you've grown up in the city, if you don't have any experience with living in a rural area, it's like you remember that show Green Acres. I mean, when you don't know anything about farming. You like the idea, but you have no skills. So you really do have to take some time and visit a farm and understand the difference. Knowing how to live if your electricity goes out, or having a battery backup system, or a solar system, or knowing how to cut wood and make a fire. I mean, you have to know how to live if you don't have all of the modern conveniences. Knowing how to build a well, knowing how to catch rainwater. You know, what do you do if something happens with the plumbing? You know.
Right.
So survival skills is something that needs to be taught.
Exactly. See, I think
rural living.
Right, rural living, I mean, you don't have the comfort and, well, you could have the comfort, but a lot of people are just not used to, they haven't grown up with the skill set, but I'm looking at, if you want to get ahead of the game financially, you've got to have a rural strategy in there some kind of way, because what I'm looking at is, I've been buying property for the last 6 years in rural areas, so essentially, I'm looking at, matter of fact, talk about generational wealth. In order to zero out my mother's estate, okay, which is on the grid in New Orleans, Washington, D.C., here in Florida, I'm going to have to essentially do things in a rural area so I can generate the money to wipe out any debt or expenses that are left behind by her that are in an urban area. So that's one of my primary reasons for doing rural stuff, because it's no way that I can pull it off in an urban area. No way.
Right. Well, there's one last thing I want to say before I leave, is that whatever person's situation is, if there's one thing this pandemic has taught us, that we have to think of how we can survive if we didn't have any of these other systems. You can't just keep panicking about it or getting upset about it or getting angry about it. Have a game plan for your own survival. And that means having those survival skills, knowing how to live if you didn't have any physical comfort of urban living. And one of the things that was, when Facebook went down the other day and everybody was all upset,
I was one of them.
Being connected, what happens if you don't have any electronics connecting you? How are you going to live? We need to figure those things out and be prepared so that you can survive peacefully, whether it exists or not, whether your phone is working or not, whether your washer and dryer is working or not, whether your stove is working. I mean, you have to have some life skills, and you have to have some things in place where you can live off nature, even if nothing electronic works. Because people were living before all of this was invented anyway. So these are the life skills that we didn't pass down. That's why urban dwellers, even if they inherited farmland, they don't know what to do with it, so they can't benefit from it. But these are the skills we have to start learning now. Everything that's happening is giving us a hint. Go back to nature. Learn how to survive off the land. Learn survival skills. Learn how to cooperate, because you're not going to make it by yourself. So start developing some social capital. Get to know your neighbors. Build a strong relationship with your family. Share your skills and create a culture of independence. That's the warning that this time is giving us. And if you heed the warning, you make the plan, or you don't, and you don't survive, you don't make it, or you live in perpetual fear and stress. So we have time now to think and plan and organize. Take the hint. Do it now.
All right, thank you.
That's my last word.
I'm going to get back with you on that, because we need to put together some events for this. In any event, thank you, Naima. You have a good rest of the day. People will be back to go to the phone lines right after this.
Thank you.
Just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay. I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
The chores.
The chores.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You are my wife.
Goodbye, city life.
Green Acres, we are there.
Coming up next on TV Land, it's Green Acres, the classic rural sitcom with a little something for everyone. Whether you're a connoisseur of self-reflexive humor or just think it's funny when people say Hooterville.
This has been a Filmways presentation, darling.
All right, well, boy, she dropped some jewels in that interview, Naima Latif. And I've been up in that neck of the woods. I was up there just for a few hours in Pembroke, or Pembroke as they call it, in Hopkins Park, Illinois, which is part of the, what do you call it, Underground Railroad. And it doesn't take that long to get there. It took us about, I went with Pleasant Steffens and Reba Brown. And my kind of place, rural place, full of opportunity, but we can't sleep on it. And obviously she's not. And I'm really proud of the fact that they got a label, man. They have a label, and they're coming up with their own product line with Pandemic Farm. So that's the golden goose. Pandemic Farms is a goose. That's a goose. And now they have their label, that's the golden egg. And we got to operate that way. All right, we're going to go to our phone lines here after we, if you don't have all those things in play, then this could happen to your family.
How it go? We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
You'll be out, man. I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man. You know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right. Relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know?
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, man, it ain't me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else.
You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
B, he was a man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
Did you prime it? That little rubber ball right there next to the spark plug. Gotta push it in 3 times before you try to start it. Gets the gas going to the car.
You want the truth? I ain't never used one of these. Never had no call to.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick you up for your landscaping skills. All these Spanish, they on paper too. Only use people like y'all. Sometimes it comes back on me, sometimes it works out fine.
Well, how long you been uptown?
10 years.
Hotter than a motherfucker out here.
Yeah, it's hot. Every day. You're going to be riding in the back of that hard truck, bouncing around every day. And your back's going to be yelling at you every day. I used to drive an SL, pretty gold convertible, nice rims. I don't even think on that car no more.
You put it behind you, huh?
Some can't. I'm just saying, you want to stay on the straight. Ain't going to be no big reward to it. This is it, right here. Prime that bitch 3 times. She'll start right up.
All right. Well, Cuddy, TV show, The Wire, got out of the game, so to speak, drug dealing. Well, he was a street assassin. He really didn't deal no drugs. He was an enforcer, I'll put it that way. Got out of that. Like he said, he didn't want to have anything to do with none of it. He was done with it. And I guess his character in the TV show The Wire was 20-something, maybe early 30s. Let's put it in the 20s. No, probably in his 30s, because he had did like 16 years in prison. He had to learn, as you heard him say, he had to learn how to use a lawnmower. All right, so some skills that you might have to pick up, but it's different because everybody isn't the same. We have all had different interests or whatever. But some people, the skill sets that you might need to learn will be, you know, dealing with STEM academic subjects, you know, science, technology. You know, that type thing. You know, math courses, trigonometry, calculus, advanced math, you know, the sciences and whatnot. So that some people that, because everybody's got a different path, okay. And not everybody's cut, you know, we have our little niche, but there's a lot of niches out there. And then, think about it. There are jobs that don't exist now that will be birthed into existence in less than a year from now. I don't know what they are, but there's always some type of emerging business or emerging industry that's popping up. You know, so, you know, you just have to. That's one of the reasons why I like watching YouTube videos, because you can spot some. I really like trends or hobbyists. I really like to pay attention to hobbyists because hobbyists, you know, you can usually gauge some stuff. Anyway, three. 3:14, your mic is open.
L.A., I've been holding on with you 1 hour, 5 minutes, 55 seconds.
And I appreciate it.
You know, when you have a guest on, go to the phone, because people on the phone,
you know what, you're
ask
absolutely right, because the guest is for people like yourself.
Yeah, now I wanted to ask Naima something. She gone.
Well, she'll be back. Not today, though, but she'll be back.
Yeah, but, you know, if somebody
well,
out there
I get
listening
the point,
may
though,
be a
right
business person. And I'm going to tell you one other thing, too. I've been listening to you for, four or five years?
Yeah.
And I'm not criticizing you now. I'm giving you some elderly
advice.
I call
it constructive comment.
Do what you say you're going to do. Because you two, you put several things out there that you say you're going to do, from tiny houses to gardens and this and that and that. But you won't take that step out there and do it. You know, when I built the house, after I drew it up and everything, I went and borrowed a friend of mine's backhoe, one of my steel erection buddies, and brought the backhoe and started digging. And then I tore down the old, I did it all by myself, ordered a dumpster, tore it down by myself. Poured the fillings and foundation, the one that I sent you the picture. I did that by myself.
How long did it take to do that?
The footing and foundations one summer.
Mm-hmm.
The house one summer.
Well, you saved a lot of money on labor, I'll give you that.
Well, yeah, I did. But it was just an experience. And let me tell you something about these ancestral homes. Ancestral homes last only so long because the materials in them are going to deteriorate.
True.
Especially the concrete. People think concrete lasts forever. No, it does not. It deteriorates. And the wood, the material in it, otherwise it's going to deteriorate. Now, if I was going to build an ancestral home, you know what kills that ancestral wealth in the urban area? Blacks themselves. You know how
that
goes.
Yeah, I'm not
going to
deny that. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah, because when you have people in the neighborhood like what she was talking about, they the one that's killing your wealth. And sooner or later, you're going to have to get rid of that ancestral home. Now, it's good what people make mention. And I call it the J.R. Ewing effects, the Dallas effects, because that was one of my favorite sitcoms, programs. Because J.R., Bobby, Miss Ellen, they all lived in that big house.
Jock Ewing, the dad, yep. I used to watch it every
Friday
night.
They all lived in that big house, them three families. They had one kitchen, one dining room set, one living room set, in three or four or five bedrooms, five different families. So, yes, what you're talking about is cool. And that's the way I would recommend
now,
it going.
Now, Bianca, you brought up a very good point on what you're saying. Because, like the concrete thing, cement thing, I haven't even thought about that aspect of it, but you're absolutely right. Because a big part of this stuff going from generation to generation, or even when you're still living, before you even pass it on, is maintenance.
Well, absolutely. That's one of the big parts of it. Your answer to that was holding on line while you went to three different stories. You should call open the line.
You know, you're right. I gotta. You know what, man? I'm glad you put that out there. Well, I call it constructive comment because I need to hear that. So you're right.
Yeah, you gotta listen.
Yeah.
To,
when
you,
I got
you
a
gotta,
guest on,
Bill.
Yeah, I don't need to be running my mouth. Just put it on.
And
the
you
phone
and Robin could have a
content
conference call sometime. Because y'all be talking about the things on the show over and over again. Another thing about ancestral homes, you got to make sure you know where you're gonna put it.
Very
because
important.
Going back with your great-grandfather, when he built that house, it was nothing around where he built it. Now you got an urban area, rules changed, people changed and everything else changed. Crime has changed. Crime kills black families' wealth building in the home. Neighborhood go down, what goes down next?
Very good point. Actually, several good points. You're right. Because I'm thinking about my great, I never met my great-grandfather, but I met my great-grandmother a few times. And you're right, that house to this day is in a rural situation, you know, with 88 acres. But the house in New Orleans, you know, I don't know when that was built or nothing like that, but that's urban out there. You're right. Rules change.
Yeah, but, okay.
There's more density. There's more people. All that.
I bet you can't sell it. Unless you
I
sell it.
I tried to, but we get postcards every month or so. Can I buy your house? But, you know.
Yeah, somebody want to give it to you for nothing. And what they're going to do is fix it up and let somebody come in and rent it, maybe buy it. Most people ain't going to buy no houses down there in New Orleans because of where the damn place sit. Those that's smart.
Right, under what do you call it, sea level?
You're under sea level. You wake up one morning, you be halfway out in the land.
Well, now let me ask you. Now you built, you built your home in St. Louis proper?
No, I was in St. Louis County.
Oh, county. Okay. But you bring up a very good point.
You got to
decide
Louis.
Where you going to build it if you're thinking in terms of ancestral.
Yes, and plus,
you're right.
See, this is the way it should work. You got to have a husband and a wife, and then have children. Them children grow up, and then they repeat it. Their mother and father, and they have children. Their mother and father is not grandparents. Now, you got to have a husband and wife that have. Dysfunctional. What I mean by functional, they produce. And one of the easiest things to produce is income, because you got to plan for their future. You got to plan for your future. How you gonna live? So if you do it the right way, and way it's been done, I guess since the baby boom was coming out of World War II, they went to work for somebody. Those that wanted to, they worked, earned a pension, and they collected Social Security. Now, until recently, I guess started about in the late 60s, 50s, people that was working like that accumulated quite a bit. Social Security for a couple paid about $3,500 a month. That's just Social Security.
Right.
Then if you got a pension, and I don't mean a government pension because they're very dangerous. It depends on where you are, on what you're in. Some of them pensions can pay you $70,000 a year. $70,000 plus $36,000, that's $106,000 a year. I know somebody who just retired with that kind of income, plus other things they got saved up. They ain't hurting for nothing. Then you can do things for those children like she was talking about.
Right.
Now, that's just one way. There's a lot of ways, but that's just one way. And, you know, a way that I was more common, that I know common of. So you got to build that ancestor home in an area where it won't be encompassed by a hood, because when them hoods come up, they would cut into your assets. That is the reason why come people flee. That's why whites flee. They ain't taking no chance. You know why? Because all indication, history, and data shows you which way things are going to go. And you cannot take a chance. Next thing is the school. If you're going to get married, then raise a family, well, you want your children to be educated. Not subjugated like they are in some of these public schools. So if you don't have the ability to take advantage of the cliche, location, 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 and with that
right.
goes school, 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 education, education, education. Because if you move in the hood, you're not going to send your kids to them public schools. So now you got to pay out of your pocket to go to private schools.
Right.
And that money accumulates over a period of time. My kids went to private school, except for those that wanted to play in competitive sports.
Mm-hmm.
But the high school went to a private school. That costs money.
Right. It does.
So if you don't move in a community that the school system is ran accordingly, then you got to pay money in order to make sure that your child is being educated and trained in a way that it's going to pay off. That's why that's another reason why come blacks don't accumulate like they should, like you would expect them to. Nigerians do. How is it that they know what to do? You know the Nigerians coming across the ocean that's living in the hood. Where do they live? They live out.
I've observed, particularly in the D.C. metro area, the ones that I observe, the majority of them that I've run across live in a nice suburb.
They don't move amongst them damn Negroes in the
no,
city.
No, they don't. Mm-mm.
That's why I tell folks, if you want to study somebody, study them Nigerians and some of these other Africans. Them the ones to study. Don't need to be getting no books and all that stuff, Miseducation of the Negro and all that crap. Study them Nigerian families. They black? Why come they ain't out there picketing and protesting?
Yeah, because I know the ones I know about or observe, a lot of them have a business. Or if you go to the hospital, they're doctors, nurses, own clothing stores, or they own a variety of businesses. But I haven't seen any of them. I haven't seen any of them live in the hood, so to speak.
People that's got a profession ain't got time to be digging no dirt up in the backyard.
That's true.
That's why come you have outlets like what, L.A.? Whole Foods.
Ah, you're right.
That's
yes,
why they
yeah,
have supermarkets.
Right.
You know,
Whole Foods people are not going to be digging up anything.
No, and the people that go shop there. And you know another thing. Supermarkets have two purposes. One, they supply and you can go get what you need. And you know what the next major purpose is? Is
where?
That they can store what you need. See, when you go to the supermarket, you buying stuff for maybe one or two meals. You ain't buying stuff to be storing for months when times get bad because it's spoiled.
Right.
Leave it at the supermarket. Let them take care of that. They're going to keep it fresh. Mm-hmm. They're going to keep it safe. They're going to keep it packaged correctly.
Right.
That's why you pay for that supermarket. If you grow all that stuff out in the backyard, now you got to go through the process of preserving it so when you do get ready to eat it. Generally, nobody's going to be doing that. Why would they?
That's true.
That's why I come to little urban gardens. The first year when whites come in with these groups and build them and they leave, you drive by there next year or 2 years, it's nothing but weeds. Because the people ain't got time to be doing that.
Right. Good point. The people that go to Whole Foods, you're not going to catch them in a garden. Or it'll be rare.
They're going
to
be spending extra money because they got the money to spend it.
Right.
That's why I tell you, you have people say their kids shouldn't be doing college. Well, why not? You know what your college does to you? What did you say about Naima when she was on, in particular of her habits, when you were describing her? You said that she...
Good work ethic.
She got good work ethics. Well, that's what going to college gives you. It gives you ethics to do things that you have to do.
Well, that's true. To get through college, you got to have discipline, bare minimum. You got to have discipline to get
through. You're damn right you do. You got to have all those things that you need to have when you go beyond, even if you're working for yourself. What did she say? How many hours does she work?
Oh, man, I have no idea. I mean, you know better than I. She's on 7 days a week for God knows how many hours.
That, you're absolutely right. That is ethics. She don't have time for no TMZ. She don't have time for all those other going to the club.
You're right.
She don't have time and don't find no need in messing with the name, the hip-hop stuff. What do they call that when they got
the Breakfast Club?
And she don't have time for that.
She don't have time for none of that, no.
But those that do have time for that, guess what they're doing? They are helping to make those that's providing you with that entertainment rich.
Right. Yeah, particularly, what's that one? It's called World Style Hip Hop. All they have on there is toxic stuff.
And I don't know nothing about that, me myself. So the best thing to do, and see, here's the thing. I just got through describing something that should have been going on all along. Now you got people just not starting off or have to start all over. Educate your child to the umpteenth degree. If you got children that have the ability to become surgeons, then steer them into that area.
Right.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody, they said that their kid, their son, got a medical degree, a doctor, and also a degree in law. That cat is powerful. Now, of course, there's going to be some that ain't going to be doing anything else. Then they're going to be out cutting grass and so on and so on and so on. Everything is not made for everybody, but guess what? You don't know until you put them to the test.
True.
You got young kids that play baseball all the time, but they don't have what it takes to make the major leagues. That's a special cut breed.
That's true.
So if you don't put your child through those tests and those regimens and drills while they're young to see what an inept ability they have, then steer them into it. Always point them toward the hardest, because you're going to naturally take on the weakness when you what? Fall.
Right. Words of wisdom.
Making money. That's what this country is about. It's about capitalism.
You're right.
One of the best systems in the world. The only opposite of that is communism.
And that didn't work out with the Soviet Union.
Stay away from that socialist mindset. That's what Jesse Jackson and them is producing, socialist mindsets. You know why? Because it keeps them in business.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, how many kids he had? What, 5 or 6?
I don't know.
He had to be a part-time capitalist to feed them kids. I know that much.
Well, he gets money from his organization.
Right. Well,
see, when you have an organization that responds to people's suffering, and they respond to people's suffering in order to bring in income, in order to pay wages and salary, well, they don't want the suffering to stop.
Nope. A la L. Sharpton and, well, you just named him.
And any other ones that's out there? Umar Johnson's the same. I see he want to have a fight with Floyd Mayweather. No, not Floyd Mayweather. Mike Tyson.
Umar's got an ego. Anyway, that's another story.
And the stuff he talks about is crazy. Fuller. The stuff he talks about is crazy.
He's still around, I guess. I haven't heard of him.
Yeah, he's selling books.
I guess he's still around.
Floyd Anderson's doing what? selling books.
Right.
And now he does say some things that, that make sense. He used to be the head of the Department of Commerce for the Carter administration, if I'm not mistaken.
He was.
Yeah, so he says some things that make sense, but now it seems like he don't got into the mode of selling books and taking advantage of the bad stuff that blacks is making. Eh? But he does say some things that I have to give him credit.
Yeah, I don't agree with everything he says, but he gave a date some years ago that dates that were blacks only had a few more years to get it together before we were a permanent underclass. I don't necessarily buy that.
It is true.
But then again,
you
know,
it's
like he said, not all blacks are alike. So I'm looking at attacking this thing from a family level. Just get your family straight, and that's a lot of work. And, educating business-wise or whatever, you take care of your family, and then the rest of your world should go all right.
And, you know, Naima talked about her mother. You know what her mama was doing, don't you? Her mama was sacrificing.
Yeah.
It's going to require self-sacrifice. Somebody's got to sacrifice to kick it off. Somebody's going to say, well, I could be purging my life someplace else, but I'm going to sacrifice with it. You remember this pair of shoes I sent you a picture of?
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
With the holes in them and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's my sacrifice. I told my grandson, I said, you get out of college, I'll buy me some new shoes.
Well,
so that showed him that it requires sacrifice.
Right.
I purchased my daughter a new weapon. Cost over $1,000. I said, she asked me, Papa, why you... No, she said, Daddy, why you buy this, spend this much money? I said, if you're going to get something that's going to perform as well, it's going to perform in a meaningful way to save your life, you don't be messing around with no junk. That
correct.
May or may not. And I tell you something else. Now, that's the business to be in right about now. I was thinking about that years ago when Hillary Clinton was running against Obama. And I seen what was going on, especially with gun sales. But shit, you can't – guns and ammunition today, and black women are buying guns left and right at these gun shows. Ammunition. And I'm glad to see people do that.
These gun shows, they do background checks right on the spot? Well, how does that work?
They do a background check right on the spot. Them damn Democrats want you to wait. Who in the hell going to be? Gun show's over. You come back 5 days
gun
or whatever.
Gun shows, they don't last but so long.
Right. And see, there's a difference between these political parties. That's why come I never would be a Democrat. Them Democrats, if you on your back, a Democrat is good. But once you get on your feet, run from that fool as fast and as far as you possibly can. The average of it. And Republicans are starting to get as bad, too. Donald Trump was the best president I ever seen come along for two simple reasons. One, what he said. Two, he done it as much as possible.
Yeah, he didn't have he never held political office before. I give him credit just knowing that.
Because he took his
never
experience.
Ran for dog catcher. Ran for president of the United States first time and made it.
He made because he was saying the things that he know need to be done. He created an economy, and at the same time, what did he do? He decreased taxes. The Democrats want to increase taxes. He decreased taxes. Brought your you wanted to bring the business tax down to 15%. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Well, the damn, a lot of those social problems, not social problems, a lot of those social programs are super expensive.
Let me explain how this goes. We just got through talking. He wants to attack the middle class. Well, where do your generational wealth lie? Your grandparents and so on, they lie in that what's called the middle class. They don't work. They're receiving pensions, the maximum in Social Security. They want to destroy that. Now, if it's gone, what happens to your children? They lose that resource that Naima was talking about, able to pay for your education. It's gone. Now they got to do what? Start off struggling.
Oh, right.
Folks don't use no damn common sense. Then they're talking about making it harder for people to get weapons. Let me get this call talked.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks for the feedback. Hold on, I can't even log off right now. Wait a minute. Now I'm just coming back into my studio. All right, what's tomorrow, Friday? Okay, wait a minute, people. Okay. My board was acting funny. All right, thank you, Pianchi, on that. Man, what's wrong with this? Feedback here. Not feedback. Yeah, on the feedback he gave. Okay, people, my board is acting kind of funny. All right, wait a minute. All right, I'm trying to avoid getting booted off. Okay, all right. We're going to wrap it up for today. We'll be back tomorrow. I don't know what we're going to be talking about tomorrow. Anything you guys want to talk about. On that note, have a good day.